Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you the first in a while Jug Life podcast. Sorry about the long hiatus, but I have been busy coaching athletes for the NFL Combine, and that's who I talk with today. One of my partners in that, Les Spellman of Spellman Performance. We have been working along with Jordan Palmer, his quarterback summit, and all headed up by the Mamba Sports Academy, preparing 10 athletes for next week's NFL Combine. So today I talk with Les a little bit about, kind of what the combine training process is, flaws that we see in the combine, how we would redesign some of the tests, and then bring you our position by position rankings of the best combine performances of all time. So if you love training, you love football, you'll enjoy this episode. You can check out more stuff from Les on his Instagram at Spellman Performance. He is a great speed coach. He's also been a guest on a previous episode of The Jug Life, so go back and give that a listen, as well as an extra bonus episode we did where he takes me through some speed drills. Today's episode is brought to you by Roan. This lovely sweatshirt is the Heritage Pullover from Roan. I love Roan's stuff. I wear it, to dinner, to train, to golf, to play golf, to whatever you need. Roan has got some great-looking apparel for you, so use Jug Life, J-U-G-G-L-I-F-E, at Roan, R-H-O-N-E.com for 20% off your order. Enjoy the episode. Visit jtsstrength.com for all of our online coaching offerings, Juggernaut apparel, books, all that good stuff. Subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe to the YouTube. Enjoy the episode. Lester, my man.
What's up, sir? Chilling, man.
So we're wrapping up here, pretty much last day of hard training in the books before we head off to Indianapolis for the combine. How many years have you been doing combine prep?
This is my eighth year in the industry. I have like a year where I didn't do anything, but eight years I've been involved in some type of combine prep.
So for the uninitiated, the listeners at home, kind of give a little overview of what we've been doing the last few months here.
Yeah, so I mean, the main thing is like guys come out of college and they're ready for games, they're ready for competition in that sense, but not so much like performance. So come in, they test the guys, make sure we get a baseline on everybody, and then the first 2 weeks are about like building a base and getting the guys just healthy again, and then the next 2 weeks are about building some more intensity, and then the middle 2 weeks are about just like seeing how far we can redline and push their strength and speed levels with the volume. And then the last 2 weeks, we drop off. So it's like blocks of two. And then we do a little pretest like we did last night. And then give them about 7 days of recovery before their competition.
So as you've been doing this for 8 years, last year had a lot of notable guys. Quinnen Williams run super fast time. Greedy Williams. What are some trends you've noticed as guys begin the process of sort of deficient, common deficient areas that strength coaches listening at home can maybe pick up the slack on?
Yeah, I think coming out of college, guys, well, number one, they just played a ton of games. So they're more in maintenance strength when they're coming out. They're, keeping the guys healthy for games so that they can play. Not so much pushing the performance parameters. But what I've noticed the most is like some college programs don't have a speed technical component. Mm-hmm. So they'll do speed work in the sense like they're doing volume of speed. They'll run 10s, they'll run 20s, they'll run 40s. But as far as like the motor learning and the technical aspects, those really aren't being taught, probably because there's not enough time, which I understand. But I think we spend the most time on teaching the guys just more like body awareness stuff, like where their hips are, where their trunk is, how to accelerate, how should they contact the ground, and then building simple drills to really build out like a technical model for the athletes. I think that's like undervalued, and I think it's like if you were a hockey player, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to learn how to skate. And you learn how to skate, then they're going to teach you how to skate with a stick, then they're going to teach you how to skate with pads, and then you play. But when you play football, it's like they're going to teach you how to run plays, but they're not going to teach you how to run while you're running a route, or how to run while you're tackling, you know, all those things. So I think that's an undervalued category for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that really even goes to youth sports across the board.
Yeah.
I go watch my little nieces play soccer, and my brother is the soccer coach, and they're, you know, 6, 7 years old or whatever when I'm watching this, and they're trying to run a play. And of course, in football, you have to have plays. Like, mm-hmm. you can't just go and you know, play pickup football in the organized sense. Yeah. But it's like, if you can't do the parts of the sport, you can't sprint, stop, change direction, you know, throw, catch, block, and tackle.
Yep.
Those with technical proficiency, trying to organize those, you know, shitty parts into a strategy is kind of a worthless thing. But to piggyback on the idea of the stuff that's lacking, I think it's that idea of conflating speed work and conditioning work. And when that line really starts to get blurred,
yep.
and guys are training under too high a fatigue levels, or running too high of volumes, too long of distances, too short of recoveries, all that type of stuff,
yep.
that seems to be a really common theme across the country.
Yeah, I think, like, it comes down to time, too, because if you have an hour, I know the head coaches, they have an agenda as far as, like, get the guys fitter. The strength coaches have an agenda, like, keep everybody healthy. So it's a fine line, because the strength coaches don't want to push their, like, velocities too high, because mm-hmm. then there's a higher risk. And then the head coach is going to look at the guys doing 4 or 5 reps and be like, wait, the guys aren't going to be in shape.
Yeah.
So it's like a fine line to kind of, like, please both sides. And I think I've been in that probably 4 or 5 times, like, working with Olympic teams, where I would do speed work and the coach would come talk to me privately, like, hey, these guys didn't run enough.
Mm-hmm.
Dang, okay. So it's kind of hard to, like, coming from a speed perspective, the volumes are extremely low. The intensity is extremely high.
Yeah, that's like, yeah. for me with the track background, and the time that it really started to stand out to me, the first time I got to be around truly elite sprinters in 2009 track season, UK Athletics, like British national track team, came out here, mm-hmm. and they were using our track at Concordia where I went to college. It was Dwayne Chambers, Simeon Williamson, Christina Hurugu, Christina's gold medalist in 2008. Dwayne had just run 6:42 in the 60 in that indoor season. Simeon was defending British national champion in the 100, and Andy Turner was European champ in the 110s. And if you bring a football coach up there, or a football player up there, and see him do the workout, you're like, man, sprinters are so lazy. You know, mm-hmm. they run for 5 seconds and then rest for 5 minutes, kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an hour and a half warm up, and then 5 seconds of work, 5 minutes of rest, 3 or 4 reps like that, and yeah. then a big cool down and yeah. or go lift. And yeah, when you have truly elite speed, it's such a big input to the athlete, you know, fatigue wise and neurologically,
yeah.
that you can't do a lot of volume of it.
Yeah. And I think, like, even just minimum volume of, like, once every 10 days for high-velocity running would probably do a lot for athletes in college. And then using drills to kind of build the volume part of it. So, like, we use something called a dribble, which is, like, a progressive height pattern to basically work the contact under the hip and keeping a cyclical pattern. You can do a ton of dribbles because it's at medium velocity.
Mm-hmm.
And then you save the real fast stuff for the end, and maybe it's, you know, 4 or 5 reps. But, you know, a lot of guys in college never run their fastest unless they're in a game situation, which is a risk. So, like, if you expose those athletes to high velocities in training, they'll either have higher velocities in a game, or they're going to have less injuries in a game because they've been exposed to that stimulus before. So...
So as we look at the combine as a whole, and you and I were kind of talking the other day about, oh, before I go to that, to if you want to learn more about some of Les's speed training drills and ideas, he is a now recurring guest on the Jug Life, so you can go back and check out his other episode that we did, and then we had an extra special, you know, special kind of video with that where he's taking yours truly through some speed drills, and I'm... without a doubt winning the world championship of best drills for any man over 300 pounds. I might have still been over 300 then. It was close.
Yeah.
But I'll link those so you can go check that stuff out. Well, so we were talking about the combine the other day and talking with Pat Harlow, as we've been training here at J. Sarah High School in Orange County, and their head football coach, Pat Harlow, played a decade in the league and is helping position drills with a bunch of offense linemen, helping those guys get ready. And, you know, combine was the exact same stuff when he was coming out as it is now. So, you know, it hasn't changed in 30 years. It hasn't changed probably in almost since its existence. And now there's so much new technology. Now we're using GPS in the training and force plates, and there's tendo units and all this kind of stuff. But they're still testing the same way at the combine. So you're the combine czar. Now you're Roger Goodell's right hand man, director of the NFL Combine, Les Spellman. Yeah. How are you redesigning the combine to help get better information, like about who can really run, who can really change direction? What are some drills that you would change?
Yeah. Well, first, like, the combine itself is a little flawed. Like, just the way they test, like, the testing is based off a hand start, laser finish, which means that it's dependent on the starter to determine the time, because if an athlete starts and the guy with the hand start hits it late, it's going to end up being a faster time, which has happened. It's happened to a couple of our guys, which was a huge blessing. And it's happened the other way for a couple of our guys, which wasn't a huge blessing. So just in that sense, it's like, it's really tough to have people's careers on the line and using human error to determine.
When a guy's looking at his 400th 40-yard dash in the past couple days, he might not be quite as quite as in tune to hitting that button.
So we've done a ton of research looking into, like, how fast is the human reaction from 5 yards away, anywhere between like a tenth of a second to like 0.175, which means that an athlete is like halfway to their first step by the time most times they're starting, which means that all the times that we're looking at right now are probably a little bit faster than what they really are, which is good for ratings, good for TV, good for all that. But it's really tough when you're having these guys run and their whole career is on the line for it. So
yeah, as an outsider looking in, you'd be like, oh, okay, you know, some guys it gets a little faster, some guys a little bit slower. So it's like it all shakes out in the end.
Yeah.
But when you're that single individual, and, you know, a tenth of a second can cost you, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, especially over the aggregate of your career. Like, that's something they really need to be more precise with.
Yeah.
So you think a fully automatic timing is the answer there, or GPS and max velocities on the GPS? Or
yeah, I think it's a combination of, like, fully automated timing. And I know there's probably going to be a big shift, like, If there was fully automatic timing, it would be pretty shocking to the public, but it would take like a year, maybe, or maybe even 2 years for the public to fully understand, like, that the entire time the guys have been running at the combine, it's been a hand start, laser finish, or hand start, hand finishing. Like, so there's going to be a little shock value in that, but having the velocities tracked also is huge. So, like, right now, like, if you had somebody track their max velocity, they might be running up to 24 miles per hour, but they can only hold it for a brief second. But I think there's value in seeing what velocity a guy can reach in 40 yards. And that
information is becoming more and more relatable to the public. Cause at this point, the combine is probably as much a TV show as it is a player assessment tool.
Yeah.
And yeah, the reason that I think they're not changing this stuff is cause they don't want that shock value. And to have to say, okay, well, all these, you know, Chris Johnson and John Ross and all those times, or Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson, like that wasn't quite right. We're just kind of starting over, whatever. Yeah. They want to have this historical comparison.
Yep.
And the fans have it in their head now. They'll, you know, if guys aren't running 4.2s or 4.3s, then they're not, you know, elite speed guys.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Yeah, and it's like, if you were to look at Chris Johnson's 10, for example, 1.40 for a 10 is extremely impressive. To put that in perspective, the whole Olympic field probably runs 1.45. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So was that a real 1.40? I'm gonna go with maybe, but I think it would be really shocking to see like what these guys actually run in the 10 and all that. So yeah, changing that up, having a true velocity reading would be incredible for these guys.
When you see some of these numbers, like these historical numbers, like Deion Sanders, 4.12, or Bo Jackson, 4.12, something in that range.
Yep.
How legitimate do you think that those numbers potentially are?
Yeah, so when they were testing then, they were standing at the 40-yard line, and they're using a stopwatch. So the difference there, the human eye can, from 40 yards, will register that about 0.25 seconds slower than what it actually is. About 0.175 to 0.25 seconds slower, faster than what it actually is. So let's say a guy runs 5 flat on a laser, from a hand time, it might be 4.75 because the guy's standing at the 40-yard line and he's viewing the first movement from 40 yards away. So by the time his brain registers that and he hits his stopwatch, it's 0.25. So
you said if he ran 5 on the hand,
yeah,
that it really would have been 4.75. It should be the other
way. Other way. So
if he ran a 5.0,
yeah,
and the guy's starting it from 40 yards away, mm-hmm, it's probably somewhere between a 5.17 and 5.25.
Yeah, exactly.
So right away, that Deion Sanders or Bo Jackson 4.12 might really be a 4.28 to a 4.33.
Yeah, probably about 4.3-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember, you know, seeing those numbers and you get football coaches arguing with you one way, and you know, coming from a track background, I was like, you know, if you take that 10-meter split data of Usain Bolt, I think at the time when I did this, it was off his 9.69, and take out the reaction time of the athlete reacting to the gun, and then, you know, convert some meters to feet and yards, and he would have been running about a 4.14, like fully automatic
timing
with track spikes on a track, and being the fastest person to ever walk the earth.
Yeah.
So I think to think that football guys are running comparable times is a bit laughable.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, especially then, because like, yeah, it's not fully automated. There's no split times like that are fully automated. So like, if you look at the second 10, for example, some of the fastest guys at the combine are running their second 10 about like 1 second. And then they're running their last two splits like 9-something, 0.9-something, and 0.8-something. A couple guys stay at 0.8 for both. Like, you look at that data, that means that their 10's got to be like 1.40, 1.41 for them to run 4.1. Like, it's not saying it's not possible, but it's not probable.
I remember hearing that Ben Johnson, when he was on a doping suspension or something, worked out for some NFL teams.
Yep.
And on a hand-timed 40, ran a 3.76. And I would say, though, that...
Yeah, he could roll, though. He could roll.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the best starter in track and field history.
Yeah.
That he's running a 3.76 if Deion Sanders is running a 4.12.
Yeah.
Now, maybe, you know, Ben Johnson's really running a 4.1.
Yeah.
And Deion's running a 4.3, but it's that kind of relationship.
Yeah, no, for sure. These guys, like, I mean, even now, like, we're teaching the guys how to jump out from the start because they know the reaction time from a guy holding a starter at 5 yards is going to be a little bit faster than you know, the laser. So we know that if the guys jump out, they get, it's like almost a tenth of a second, you know, before the time is actually started.
Yeah. So what about any of the other drills, the change of direction stuff or the jumps? Yeah, I
mean, the 5.10.5 and the L drill, like, I would say they're more technical in the sense, like, there's tricks to actually being successful at them that don't really translate to anything else except that drill. And same with the, like, 5.10.5 and L drill. Because you got guys that aren't that fast that can run extremely good 5.10.5s.
Describe that Y drill that you had the guys running with the lights.
Yeah,
I feel like that would be a much more useful type of drill and an easy to implement thing in a testing situation like the combine.
Yeah, wide drill is dope. So they start off, they run full speed. When they hit the first gate, there's going to be a reaction that they have to, a choice they have to make. So there's a gate set up about 7 yards to the left and 10 yards in front, and then 7 yards to the right and 10 yards in front. So one of those lights is gonna blink, and they're going to have to make a decision to run to one of those lights. So they have to use their peripheral vision to decide which direction to run to. And then the time is basically how fast the reaction was from that first gate to that choice that, where they ran through the gate. And there's like a bunch of variations. You can do that once. You can do it two different decisions. Like you can do, there's a lot of different reaction based stuff. I think football is a reaction sport and they have to be able to make decisions.
Yeah. Is that, so, that processing of like the, you know, visual processing, the visual stimulus and reacting to it.
Yeah.
That's what makes really good players. Like that's what creates a great player. Not just a great track guy, a great tester.
Yeah.
And why you see people in both directions, either someone who tests really fast, but they don't play fast because they can't react to what's happening, or even if we get more into that when it happens like on the field, they're actually almost more predicting what's happening based on seeing it thousands of times before. Yeah. You know, so you get someone who's this combine king, but then doesn't play fast, or the other side of things, the Jerry Rice's, Tim Brown, Chris Carter's, guys who are 4'6", 4'7", 40 guys, but you know, they're never getting caught from behind and they play really fast.
Yeah. Because like in all the combine drills, like all we're doing is teaching them how to like get better at the test.
Mm-hmm.
Here's this little trick, you know what I'm saying? Like here's how you do a little bit better at the start, here's how you do a little bit better in this drill, and like yeah, we're teaching them that, but like that's not gonna help them in football. Like How do you test somebody so that you can see what their mind is like when they play a game?
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the combine, you know? Some guys don't care enough to really get really good at the test, and they may not do that well, but they're probably a beast football player.
And ultimately, a lot of the testing becomes, I think from the scouting side of things, like you're good enough at the test.
Yeah.
That if you sort of fall within this acceptable range of speed, of agility, of strength, that, all right, you're good enough, so let's just watch your film.
Yeah.
And then if someone is below that range, like, you know, they're not fast enough, then let's take a second look at their film and kind of reevaluate if they're going to be able to make it happen against better competition, or if they're exceptionally explosive, okay, now let's take another look at their film. Maybe they weren't being utilized in the right scheme or they didn't have the right coaching. And
yeah, it's just become overhyped and almost too important. When it's really just like a check the box type thing.
Yeah.
But it's become life or death, you know.
And for the 225 test, 225 bench test, that's probably the worst test at the combine. It's a strength endurance.
Yeah.
Strength endurance test for, you know, an explosive sport, not a strength endurance sport.
Right.
Football play lasts 5 or 6 seconds, but a guy who's going to do 40 reps of 225, that's going to last, you know, 45 seconds to a minute, so they don't have a huge correlation. Plus, the guy's, you know, the best bench pressing body, short arms, mm-hmm. is not the football body that they want. Of course, they take that kind of thing into account a little bit.
Yeah.
I remember when people were making a big deal of Jadeveon Clowney, being like, oh, he only did, I think it was 17 reps or 20 reps or something at 225.
Yeah.
And I remember watching the video and being like, they should be psyched about that. That dude's got like a 7-foot wingspan.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
So for him to do that compared to some real short arm D tackle, but they should just get rid of 225 tests. I mean, it's an easy thing that, you know, they can put on TV and gym bros can relate to, and they can go and do 225 tests at 24 Hour Fitness. But whether it's, you know, a tendo unit, I think a simple one would be to have the linemen use 315, the big skill guys 275, small skill guys 225. Put a tendo unit on there, which I think the NFL can afford a couple.
And,
you know, do three reps and measure peak velocity or average velocity, or even get one of those, you know, like they have at UFCPI, those punching pads that measures the force, and you know, so you can see how hard Francis Ngannou punches. Set one of those things up and have O linemen and D linemen, you know, delivering two hand punches to that and measure the force.
That'd be dope. I like that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know why, like, also, like, O-linemen are running 40 yards still.
Yeah.
It's like, you're, I mean, a lot of, I've seen a lot of guys killing themselves to drop weight and run more volume and getting hurt because they're trying to run a good 40. And all that really matters for them is 10, maybe even a 20. But, you know, you see guys, like, they run their 10. Like, Quinnen, for example, we only really practiced the 10. Sometimes, like, maybe once or twice, we ran a 20. He ran 4.83, you know, like, but all that really mattered for him was, like, oh, they're looking at his 10 split, 1.67, you know, that's really what the guy should be tested on for that. And you can look at receivers, yeah, it makes sense to run a 40, but maybe the start's different because a 3-point start is just so technical. Mm-hmm. Like, why are we still doing that? Like, they could have maybe, like, a run-in, or they could have a gate set up at 50 centimeters and takes away, like, the variance in the start. And then you just look at how quickly can they accelerate the top speed.
Yeah.
Where do they hit top speed? Use the GPS data to determine how many yards it took for them to get to top speed, how long they kept it, and what is their deceleration rate?
Just put a GPS on them and have them run the rep tree.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be dope.
If you haven't heard about Roan, you are really missing out. Roan is a men's performance lifestyle and premium activewear brand engineered for unparalleled quality and comfort. They are an absolute necessity for guys on the go. Doesn't matter if you're training in the gym or jumping on an international flight, they're your go-to men's clothing brand. I've got a ton of apparel from Roan. Love it all. The Peak polos, the Sentry tanks, the Bulldog shorts, the Guru shorts, the Heritage sweats, Heritage pullover, super comfy, great stuff. They've got everything that you need. So wherever your active lifestyle takes you, they've got something perfect for the occasion. In addition to Roan's top-rated training gear, they engineer elevated clothing that blends corner office class with sweatpant comfort. And now Roan has just released their amazing new commuter collection, perfect for looking great and staying comfortable at the office, at dinner, on the golf course. Wherever you need to go, Roan Commuter Collection has got something for you. So go to roan.com/juglife today and use promo code JUGLIFE to get 20% off your first purchase. That's rhone.com/juglife, promo code JUGLIFE for 20% off. roan.com/juglife, promo code JUGLIFE. I cannot recommend Roan apparel highly enough. I've made probably 8 or 10 orders of it. On my own, you know, the first exposure I got is when they sponsored the podcast. And I just love it. I keep ordering stuff from them. It's great. Go check it out.
So even though we've just talked about how a lot of these tests are overrated and maybe not the best indication of who's going to be a good football player, still love the numbers. Still love the times. Love all these great performances. And it's, you know, I've been into watching the combine from definitely since I started high school back in like 2000, mm-hmm. you know, trying to find the numbers and then, you know, thinking about doing those drills for high school combines and then getting into training. So I made up a list of position by position, some of the best combine performances of all time. So I'm going to say the numbers. If you could give a little bit of commentary on how significant some of those are. So here's our all combine team position by position. Quarterback, Cam Newton. The 6'5", 248 pounds, ran a 4.59, 6.92 in the three-cone drill, 35-inch vertical, 10 feet, 6 inches broad jump.
Sheesh. I mean, what are we going to say? That's not even – that's a unicorn. That's not even human.
And then some other ones
4.59 is moving.
Yeah, some other ones that were close, like notable quarterback performances – RG3 ran like 4.41, 4.438, something like that.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, Olympic bound hurdler.
Yeah.
Tim Tebow, not quite as fast in the 40, but huge vertical, like a 38-inch vertical.
Yeah.
Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck killed it.
People sleeping on Andrew Luck.
He ran a 4.58?
Or no, 4.6? 4.64. Yeah, 4.64. Yeah, so, you know, 0.05 of a second behind Cam Newton.
So nobody would have, like, remembered that. I remember watching that. Like, Andrew Luck is super athletic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Running backs. I got two running backs here. First, Chris Johnson, CJ2K. Then the NFL Combine record in the 40 of 4.24. 35-inch vertical, 10-10 in the broad jump. You remember seeing that
yeah.
time?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when he ran that, I'm like, whoa, what? Because, I mean, the fastest before that was, I don't even know where it was. Who had the fastest before that?
I think it was...
That was the first year that they did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The... But Chris Johnson, after that happened, he was the one who was coming out and challenging Usain Bolt yeah. and stuff. And let me just tell you, Chris Johnson, you're very fast, but you don't want that smoke.
No, he would have got beat by that.
No part of that smoke.
He would have got beat. Well, I mean, that's one thing that I was looking at, because they said his 10 was 140, which is very, very, very difficult to run a 140. If the fastest people in the world aren't running 140, who knows? So
on a track and
yeah,
spikes.
Exactly.
Training
exactly.
only for that exact thing.
Yeah. But he's explosive. I remember how twitchy he was. 10-10 broad jumps, freakish. What was his vert?
35.
Yeah, sorry.
Some honorable mentions there were Bo Jackson, again, sheesh. Incredible athlete, just hard to verify the data for him. Adrian Peterson. There was a running back named Niles Davis out of Arkansas several years ago who was like 5'9", 225, and ran a 4.38. But I think this best combine performance for a running back, Jerick McKinnon, 5'8", 209. Can you close that door for me? 5'8", 209, 4.41, 40.5-inch vertical, 11-foot broad jump, 32 reps of 225.
Sheesh. 32 reps?
32 reps of 225.
He probably has short arms.
Yeah, 5'8", 209, but I mean, that's just, that's, it's a very well-rounded performance.
Yeah, sheesh.
Wide receivers, a lot of freaky ones here. Last year, DK Metcalf had an awesome one, but he's my honorable mention. We had this gentleman here the other day, John Ross, 5'11", 188, the now combine record, 4.22, 40, 37-inch vertical, 11.1 broad jump. And, I mean, he ran a 5-yard race against the guys the other day and won by a
yard. Won by 2 yards. Now, John is probably the freakiest. I don't take anything away from Chris Johnson, but he's by far faster and way freakier when it comes to that. Like, I mean, he in that 5-yard race, he literally won by, 2 yards.
Yeah.
He was joking. Like, it wasn't even serious. These are against guys that run 4.4, 4.5. Like, you know.
So this one would be up there, I think, as an all-time, regardless of position, performance. Calvin Johnson in borrowed shoes. I remember that being a thing. Like, he lost his shoes and he had to just borrow some random dude's shoes. 6'5", 239, 4.35, 40.
Sheesh.
45-inch vertical.
Oh, my God.
And a then-combine record of 11 feet 7 inches in the broad jump.
11.7?
11.7. At Megatron.
Crazy. That's crazy.
Then,
11.7? Scott, you got some work to do. 11.7? I thought your 10 whatever was 10, nice. 10.7? You got a whole foot to go.
And probably a lesser-known prospect, but wild combine performance. Played quarterback in college at Arkansas in a backfield that included Darren McFadden, Felix Jones, and Peyton Hillis. Was their quarterback, Matt Jones, who worked out as a wide receiver, played wide receiver for the Jaguars for a couple of years until a nose injury derailed his career. Matt Jones, 6'6", 242, 4'3", 740, 39.5-inch vertical, 10.9 broad jump. He's also high in the running for best white guy combine performance of all time.
Yeah, best white guy, for sure.
It's up there. There's
well, you got that, what's that kid, the white kid from 2018? Remember Alshon's video, Nick? Troy Apke.
Yeah,
Troy Apke. It's cold.
Tight end. This I think, is my number one pick.
Greatest
combine. Vernon Davis. 6'3".
Vernon Davis, the best.
254, 4.38, 40. 4.17 shuttle, 7 flat, 3 cone, 42-inch vertical, 10.8 broad, 33 reps of 225.
Yeah.
I believe he's the heaviest player to run under a 4.4.
Nah, he really ran that because, like, growing up, I grew up in D.C., and Vernon was always around Uptown. What's up, Uptown, Scotty? So we worked out with this guy, Myron Flowers, who's still in D.C. doing his thing. and Myron would bring Vernon to training. And I ran track. Like, I was a college track guy. You know, like, I was rolling, and I'd never beat Vernon in a race. Never.
And when he had those long dreads back then, he was looking like the fucking Predator.
Yeah.
Like, just chiseled out of...
He's a freak of nature. Yeah. He didn't even lift weights.
He looked like an action figure.
Yeah, he's a freak.
O-line. I got three O-linemen here.
Nick Harris. Yeah.
So first up, I think our lineman champion, Teron Armstead, who's having a nice career for the Saints now. He's from Arkansas, Pine Bluff, little school. I believe the same college as Scottie Pippen. Wow. But Teron Armstead, 6'4", 306, 4'7", 140, 34.5-inch vertical, 9'4", broad, 31 reps of 225. So what's a... Explain to the people to weigh 306 pounds and run a 4.71.
I gotta see it. That's crazy. Like that's so difficult. That means that he had an incredible amount of strength to be able to run his top speed. I'm sure like there's been a lot of O-linemen that could run good tens, but you have to be extremely strong and elastic to run the back half, the back 20. So that means like realistically, he probably ran like a 2.8. Or 2.7 something 20, and then a 1.9 or 1.9 something back 20, which is 21 almost miles per hour, 21 miles per hour at 306 pounds.
That is a big man. That's moving. Propelling himself down the field.
That's moving.
And he was like the total come out of nowhere. I don't think, you know, scouts, I guess, had heard of him, but I doubt many fans had heard of Teron Armstead at that point.
Freak of nature.
Multiple time Pro Bowler now, one of the best linemen in the NFL, Lane Johnson from the Eagles. Coming out of Oklahoma, he was 6'6", 303, ran a 4.72.
Oh, my God.
34-inch vertical, 9 feet 10 inches in the broad jump, 28 reps of 225.
Sheesh.
I guess I will say with the caveat there on Lane, he has had two suspensions in the NFL for PEDs.
Oh. So.
And
yeah.
The ultimate... Looks like Tarzan plays like Jane Award goes to Bruce Campbell from the University of Maryland. Maryland was putting out the combine freaks then because this was like a year after Vernon Davis.
Yeah, Vernon. And set the trend.
And I say that because Bruce got drafted by the Raiders, as the Raiders love drafting the combine kings. And I had a couple of buddies playing O-line up there as well, and they attested to Bruce Campbell didn't really live up to the numbers. 6'6", 314. 4.85, 40, 32-inch vertical, 34 reps at 225. But short career. Moving to the defensive side of things.
Mm-hmm.
This has got to be the record for the heaviest player to run under 5 seconds. Don Terry Poe out of Memphis. This dude rose up draft boards. It took him about 4.98 seconds to move up like two rounds in the draft.
Jeez.
As 6'3", 346, 4'9", 840, 29.5-inch vertical, 8'9", in the broad, 44 reps of 225.
God.
Don Terry Poe earned himself a bunch of money that day and is having a really good career.
He's killing it.
Yeah. Then I think my other podium, probably podium finisher here for all-time combine along with Vernon Davis and Calvin Johnson is number one draft pick from the Houston Texans, now with the Bills, Mario Williams.
Mm-hmm.
6'6", 295, 4'6", 640, 7'1", 3 cone, 40.5-inch vertical, 10-foot broad jump, 35 reps of 225.
Where are these guys growing up? Like, how are they? This is not the standard. Like, the difference between the best guys there and, like, the average is, like, half a second. He's like half a second. More than a half a second.
Yeah, looking through this data, and it was, I didn't have like a list that I could sort in this way, but Mario Williams may be the only person he's definitely the only person on this list and the only one of names that I could find to have a 35 or more inch vertical and 35 reps of 225.
God.
So the 35-35 club.
Yeah.
May only have one member to it, and that might just be Mario Williams.
Yeah.
So other D linemen, kind of interesting stories. That same year that Mario Williams came out, he had a teammate named Manny Lawson from NC State,
yeah,
who got drafted by the 49ers as like a D-end outside linebacker kind of combo edge guy. It was 265, 42-inch vertical. And I found out that Manny Lawson was the ACC indoor champion in the triple jump.
In the triple jump?
This was like a 250-pound dude.
How is that possible?
Triple jumping over 50 feet.
That's got to be bad for your joints and ligaments.
That's got to be bad for the joints and ligaments of the guy trying to block fucking Manny Lawson.
Facts.
And then also crazy D-line guy, Margus Hunt. He plays for the Colts now, played a couple years with the Bengals. So Margus Hunt was the only person ever to win the European Junior Championship in both the shot put and the discus in the same year.
Sheesh.
He is from Estonia, and he is world junior champion in the discus. Like,
didn't Estonia get in some trouble back in the day?
I think Estonia, Latvia, all those places get in a lot of trouble a lot of times on the doping side of things. But so Margus Hunt was at SMU, and he's throwing the discus, and then SMU drops their men's track program. So Margus Hunt needs to get some more money to be able to stay there in Dallas and continue to train. So Dave Woolman, the coach, tells him, "Oh, you know, try out for the football team." Mm-hmm. This guy from Estonia, he might have never even seen a game of football at that point in his life. He walks onto the football team the next year. Over the next 2 years, rather, sets the NCAA record for most blocked kicks. And he's like a specialist his first year. That's really all he does is he's in the middle of the field goal block. And then the next year he's like Conference USA, all-Conference USA D-end. So off of 2 years of football, goes to the combine, 6'8", 277 pounds, 4.6040.
Oh, my God.
37.5-inch vertical.
God.
And I guess that's how you block a lot of kicks. You're 6'8 with a 37-inch vertical. That helps.
Where did he play?
He plays D-tackle now for the Colts.
Freak of nature.
Yeah. Monster. Jeez. Monster. Then these next two guys, I couldn't decide which one to put on as like that edge kind of player. Because at the time, that was that these guys did, it was almost a negative.
Yeah.
It was like you're a tweener, you don't have a real position.
Yeah.
But they were going head to head, like back and forth in the drills. Sean Merriman, DeMarcus Ware.
Yeah.
Both, you know, DeMarcus Ware gonna go to the Hall of Fame. Sean Merriman, short career but incredibly effective while he was going. I don't know which one of them did this, but like one of them ran his shuttle or whatever and then like did a backflip there, and it was kind of like, all right, I did that. Now what are you going to do? So Merriman, 6'4", 272, 4'6", 440, 4'2", 1 shuttle, 40-inch vertical, 25 reps of 225.
Hmm.
DeMarcus Ware, 6'4", 251, 4'6", 540, 407 shuttle, 683, 3-cone.
Hmm.
Very fast. 38.5-inch vertical, 27 reps of 225.
Mm-hmm.
Beasts. Have you seen that vertical or that video of DeMarcus Ware doing hand cleans with 315?
No. How many do you do?
He does like 10 in a row. It looks like he's just doing a jumping jack. Yeah. Like he has no weight in his hands. He's just pop, 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 pop.
Sheesh.
Just popping 315 off his hips.
God. Then, I don't even know how that happens.
I got a buddy, Jeff Nichols, who was a Navy SEAL and a strength coach for Troy. Mm-hmm. He was at Troy at the same time as DeMarcus Ware, and then right after DeMarcus Ware was OCU Mignora.
Mm-hmm.
So Troy was getting some dudes.
DeMarcus, freak.
So our inside linebacker, just kind of traditional linebacker, not the 3-4 hybrid type, A.J. Hawk. This is one of the best all-around performances.
I haven't even heard of him, A.J. Hawk.
A.J. Hawk was like a Butt Kiss Award winner from Ohio State, mm-hmm. long hair.
Okay.
Played for the Packers.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. A.J. Hawk, 6'1", 248, 4'5", 940, 396 shuttle, 682 3-cone, 40-inch vertical, 11-1 broad jump, 24 reps of 225.
He hit like all the like above average standards. So he probably like had her on his board.
Like right, every like 4.6. Gold standard.
Yeah. Under a 4.6. Under, what was this, 5.75, 3.9?
3.96.
So right under 4.
40-inch vertical.
Right over 40.
11.1 broad.
Over 11, yeah. He hit all the standards.
The other guy, honorable mention for the regular linebackers, traditional linebackers, is John Alston from Stanford. Kind of undersized guy. 6 foot 223. 4.41, 40-inch vertical, 11-foot broad jump, 30 reps at 225. He was just precise. He's like, I'm going exactly solid. 40, exactly 11, exactly 30 inches.
Yeah, solid.
And then our defensive backs, Byron Jones.
God, 45-inch vert?
44.5-inch vert, so just shy of Calvin Johnson there. So Byron Jones plays, or free agent currently, but played the last several years for the Cowboys.
He's a free agent?
Yeah. From UConn. He's at 6 foot, 199 pounds, 4'4", 340, 3'9", 4" shuttle, 6'7", 8" 3-cone, 44.5-inch vertical, blows away the NFL Combine record with a 12-foot, 3-inch broad jump.
Yeah.
Because Calvin Johnson had the record, and then Byron Jones broke it by 8 inches.
Crazy.
And 18 reps of 225. So we were talking about this a little bit the other day, but how do you get, you know, obviously there's a strong correlation between jumping ability and sprinting ability.
Yep.
But how do you have a guy with such outlandish jumps, 12-3 broad jump, and I don't want to say only running a 4.43, but only running a 4.43?
Yeah, I mean, look at, like, the Olympic jumpers, for example. Like, long jumper, like, Jeff Henderson, he won the gold. Furthest jump in the world at the time, and then... But I would say in the 100, he's probably 10-1.
Yeah.
So, which is fast, but it's not competitive with the 9s. Like, Will Clay, really, really, really good jumper, but maybe not under 10-3 in the 100. So it's probably just some correlation. Like, some of these guys are just elastic, but I think the jumping part is just really, I don't know. Some guys have really good technique. Some guys have really good balance. Some guys have good elasticity. The technical part for the sprints is like, you gotta have incredible just like force. You gotta have incredible body angles, all that. So I don't know. I feel like he could have probably went like 4.3. I don't know. 4.2 is like kind of an anomaly.
You want to get a hold of him? Byron Jones?
Yeah, like, Byron Jones, hit me up.
If you listen, spell the performance.
Hit me up.
Take some of that vertical energy, make it a little bit more linear.
Yeah, more horizontal. Yeah, I told you the other day, it was like, he probably has more air time than the average person.
Yeah.
So, three categories that matter, air time, ground time, step length. They're all correlated in some way, but he probably has a lot of air time. You'll get most jumpers, triple jumpers, long jumpers. They run with a lot more air time. And then
Byron Jones 10 bound test.
He'd probably get like 40-41.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our guys are getting 30-32 right now. So he's probably 40. Yeah. That would be crazy to see, actually.
And then our last guy, who at the time when he did this, I don't know if it was just like I was the right age to really be following football because I knew about him in high school, and then he played here at USC and was like always regarded as, this is the workout warrior, ultimate freak of nature, Taylor Mays. 6'3", 230.
Goodness.
4.43, 41-inch vertical, 10.5 broad jump, 24 reps at 225.
Man.
That's a big fast man. I mean,
I think he ran a 4.3 at the...
At USC Pro Day.
Pro Day, yeah. 4.31 at Pro Day.
I went all combine numbers, so it was as even as possible, because I would have definitely had Patrick Willis in there. He was a 4.54 at the combine and a 4.38 at Ole Miss's Pro Day.
Yeah.
For a 250-pound linebacker.
Sheesh.
Get that home cooking on the tight end.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Taylor Mays, freaky guy, but sort of the type of guy when we're talking about that visually processing the information.
Yeah.
Didn't play quite as fast as he tested, but
whatever happened, Taylor Mays.
It was with the 49ers and then with the Bengals, and that's the last I knew of him was Bengals.
How old do you think he is now?
He's probably 20 8 to 30.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that range. Yeah,
close to the same age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Monster. Monster guy.
Yeah.
So it'll be exciting to see next week, of course, how all of our athletes do, but also just what the top performances are.
Yeah.
Someone could earn the honor of Jug Life all-time combine team. So next just week. So you know, guys, you have that out there as a possibility.
Yeah, yeah. I think we should do a combine trainer combine. Just putting it out there.
Just where all the coaches run against
all
each other.
All the coaches run against each other. And yeah. Do all the tests. That'd be funny. That'd be funny.
Well, from what I've heard about the combine, it doesn't sound like any of the trainers would be in any condition to perform athletic feats.
No, you get very deconditioned. You spend 2.5 months forgetting about yourself and not working out, not doing anything.
I was just talking about at the actual combine.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, about like what the habits.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to next week in Indy. You know, I'll be posting on Instagram, the results of our team here. And, yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be a good time.
For sure.
Les, thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Been a pleasure these last couple months.
Sir.
All right. Talk to you guys next time.
Peace.